Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And we're delighted that we've made it to the end of the week. It's the Friday Three Martini Lunch. The bad news is Jim and I have searched high and low and east and west, north and south for a good martini. And folks, it's just not really out there today, politically speaking. So we are going to trudge forward here with what we believe is the best news of the day. And that's that earlier reports that suggested that Senate Republicans were feverishly trying to recruit Joe Scarborough to be the Republican nominee against Bill Nelson in Florida in 2012 seemed to be hugely over-exaggerated, Jim. And that's a good thing when you consider what we were able to get out of Florida in 2010 with Marco Rubio. The idea of putting all our hopes in Joe Scarborough for 2012 was pretty darn depressing. So the idea that that's not actually apparently very much in the works is very good news.
Absolutely. This is the kind of news that makes me incapable of keeping calm and carrying on. To cite the overused Churchill phrase that Scarborough likes to cite, I am not a big Scarborough hater. I just find his comments on Twitter to be insufferably, hey everybody, let's not embrace the extremes. Hey everybody, let's compromise. Hey everybody, brush your teeth and call your mother. You know, there's this kind of nagging, Eddie Haskellness to his assessment of the political environment. Everybody disagrees with him as the extremist. He is the sensible middle. The Hill says they wanted him to run against Bill Nelson next year, and I'm told by the NRSC that is flatly, totally untrue. The reporter completely misunderstood a comment. This, they wanted him to run last cycle against either Kirsten Gillibrand or Chuck Schumer, the senators from New York. Now, as much as I just lamented the occasional infuriation you have with Joe Scarborough, he seems like he'd be an improvement over Chuck Schumer,
No argument there.
He'd be a Republican senator who would vote with us, once every three times or once every four times or something like that, instead of the zero of every three times we'd get with Schumer or Gillibrand. So not likely to happen. I have a tough time believing him giving up his perch at MSNBC and going into a very long shot bid. But, the fact that the NRSC isn't repeating its rather foolish early embrace of Charlie Crist last cycle is somewhat reassuring. On a terrible, depressing, gray day, this is the very best news we could find, Greg.
Yeah, that is kind of depressing in and of itself. But we do know that Congressman Connie Mack is likely to run for the seat. Not necessarily a rock star, but as far as I know, he's got a pretty solid voting record. And somebody could certainly give Bill Nelson a run for his money if the economy and everything else that Bill Nelson has supported continues to go in the direction that it has. Certainly Obamacare will be a major albatross around Nelson's neck, despite his efforts recently to urge a fast tracking of this through the appellate system, which will now happen because Judge Vinson ordered it that way. But the fact that Scarborough is not going to be an issue for Florida Republicans, and the fact that we still have a decent shot of picking up the seat, definitely good news. On to the bad news now. And we talked about this earlier in the week from a different perspective, that we were just scratching our heads and trying to figure out why people would be so upset about trying to get to the bottom of extremism infiltrating the Muslim community, that law-abiding Muslims were being targeted and victimized here. And for whatever reason, some of the more outspoken groups have just decided to go after Peter King in these hearings. And a little bit of a mixed report. I think you see this a little bit more negatively than I do, Jim. Clearly, the protests overshadowed this. All the interviews you saw with lawmakers and witnesses afterwards simply focused on the protests. Keith Ellison's tearful testimony got most of the news coverage. But at the same time, if you actually watch the hearings, which unfortunately most people probably didn't, the relatives of these people have unfortunately been victimized and seen their children radicalized in mosques. Certainly the father of the person who was radicalized in Nashville and then shot up the recruiting center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Very compelling testimony. So it looks as though underneath it all, we might be digging some things up, but all the chaos surrounding it certainly detracted from that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like these hearings could have served a very good and useful purpose. And I'm not going to say that they were a total waste of time. Again, I would say, I think you characterized it correctly, that the headline was, "The hearings made Congressman Ellison cry." Isn't that terrible? Shame on you, Peter King. Never mind that every time, John Boehner has a problem with his contact lenses, it's considered mockable, and right. We laugh at that. But I come to this as somebody who's kind of an agnostic on this topic of whether the American Muslim community is being sufficiently helpful in helping root out terrorists. I note that Peter King, having once been a big fan of the IRA, is probably not the right guy to have cheering the
agreed.
Leading these hearings. I think he can be bombastic and over the top at times. But I think that the issue he wants to look at is perfectly legitimate. And whenever somebody insists that you can't look at it, That makes me very nervous. It makes me very, the deepest suspicions start stirring. So I feel like this could have done a useful purpose. I was kind of intrigued when I found out yesterday. The Senate committee did a very similar look at this topic, more specifically focusing on Fort Hood. But they talked about the radicalization of American Muslims and how this happens. And then they kind of talked to experts who described it as a four-step process. And that report and those hearings were largely ignored. So I'm very curious about why it seems to be that when government looks at this topic, it's either ignored or it's demonized. And there's no way to, really get down at the bottom of it. I don't, I feel like going into this hearing, we didn't know whether it was whether this was, King was overhyping the lack of cooperation in the Muslim community, whether this was scapegoating of some kind. I do know that there were a lot of folks who said you can't look at this. We're basically, using that worn out racism or religious bigotry card. All the numbers have been rubbed off because they've been using it so many times. I wish it had not turned into such a circus because it's such an important topic. Perhaps it was inevitable. The post Ground Zero mosque, the left in this country is absolutely adamant that anybody who questions anything about American Muslims is ipso facto a bigot and impossible to have debate in those circumstances. And maybe that's the way they want it. They don't want any serious inquiries in this area.
On to the crazy martini now. And as we've chronicled in a number of different Three Martini Lunch podcasts, the president's response to various unrest in different Middle Eastern countries, basically forcing Hosni Mubarak out of power, saying almost nothing until finally calling for Gaddafi to step down. He's been at times hot and cold on the situation in Bahrain. He's been pretty quiet on Saudi Arabia. So the New York Times wrote a story in today's paper explaining the difficult balancing act that the president has to do here in trying to point out that he respects the rights of people and he wants those rights of people to demonstrate and have their voice heard. At the same time, he wants to preserve U.S. interests. And so this line comes at the end of the piece. Mr. Obama has told people that it would be so much easier to be the president of China. As one official put it, no one is scrutinizing Hu Jintao. Is he talking about himself or is he talking about the leaders of these different countries? Because he clearly hates dissent in his own country, too. Obviously, not to the extent of Gaddafi. But this is a very strange way to explain himself as he tries to navigate all this.
Clearly, President Obama's been reading a lot of Tom Friedman lately. Since his columns tend to be these love letters to the Chinese leadership and how wonderful China is and how well run the country is and how they get things done. And, Friedman at one point said, boy, if only we could have China's political system for one day to get everything done.
What?
And, basically what he's saying is if only we could stifle all dissent through brutal means, then, this country would be such a better place. I'm sure that as we say this, Greg, many of the listeners are saying, huh. Well, if Obama thinks it's so much easier to be president in China, why doesn't he run there? And Greg, you and I know why that's the case. It's because China would never accept a president born in Kenya. I'm kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm sure there's a million Media Matters for America people, setting up angry denunciations as we speak. President Obama was born in Hawaii. We're pretty sure. Anyway, but, it's not reassuring to hear the president of the United States lamenting how hard it is to be president of this country and how much easier it would be to be in charge of a country that is a de facto dictatorship. And that, that's our crazy martini, Greg, because the terrible earthquake in Japan, bad things going on in Afghanistan, the fact that the rebels are getting crushed in Libya, and oh, by the way, the NFL season might not go forward. So
happy weekend, everyone.
Happy weekend. Oh, and you said Gallagher was being hospitalized, correct?
Yes.
You know who's having a good weekend, Greg?
Who?
Watermelons. That's about it.
I guess so. Well, I hope everyone out there has a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.